Hello and welcome to Minnesota Swine and You podcast series, a University of Minnesota Extension Swine program. Today's podcast is a research update on Mycoplasma pneumoniae and investigating its antimicrobial susceptibility. My name is Sarah Sheikh Belke, your host, and I'm a swine extension educator with the University of Minnesota. Joining me today is Maria Peters, who is an associate professor in the Department of Veterinary Population Medicine. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you for the opportunity, Sarah, to be here today and to share results of our research with your audience.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about your research. Before we get really into the discussion here, would you further introduce yourself if you would like to talk kind of about your lab or kind of your research that you like to focus on?
Sure. You know, I can tell you, I am a veterinarian by training, right? I am originally from Venezuela, but I have been in Minnesota for about 20 years now. I came here originally for graduate school, and then I went to the University of Illinois for a postdoctoral training and came back to Minnesota over a decade ago. And all this time, I have been working on mycoplasma research, specifically for swine. What I did in Minnesota was referred to Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And when I went to Illinois as well, I was able to keep working with the same, bacterial model. However, we were looking at things, you know, from a different perspective. We can look at models that would help us understand immunity and immune responses in hosts and things like that. So, and then I came back to Minnesota and I have been working on specifically diagnostics, control, and eradication of mycoplasma. So I do, as part of my job, I have responsibilities in research, teaching, and outreach and service as well. So I work for the diagnostic laboratory, you know, a part of my appointment. And that implies that I worked on development of assays and tests, interpretation of results, you know, all those things to try to say, well, are we really seeing an issue with this agent or not? You know, all those diagnostics. The other part of my job that I enjoy a lot is doing disease eradication. We have done so much, you know, with mycoplasma. And when I say we, I'm including, you know, like that, it's the practitioners and it is the producers who are in the field doing the work. But we have been generating information to tell them about, you know, like ways in which they can do eradication. So what we are going to be talking about today is something related to one of those projects. And that ties very well with another one of my responsibilities that is, you know, being the director of the Swine Disease Eradication Center, which is a center of, you know, here at the University of Minnesota, but it's a center of partners or members from the industry and in production companies, clinical veterinary clinics, and all these as a group, you know, thinking of ideas that can help us move forward on disease eradication. So all that ties into what I do on a daily basis.
Very good. Thank you. I didn't realize all kind of the different things that you're involved in. So it's great to hear that. Before we get too far into our discussion, I know that all research cannot happen unless we have a funding source. And I think it's important that we recognize those funding sources when we talk about the research. So are you able to share with the audience here who funded or what were the funding sources for the research that you're going to talk about today?
Yeah, maybe, you know, I will try to focus on one topic, right? But maybe I'll talk to about different things. But the main study that we will be discussing today was funded by the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station. And they have this program that is called the Rapid Response Funds. And those were the ones that we applied with this project, right? So this was mainly the funding agency for this project.
So now let's get into talking about the research topic that you're going to focus on today. Can you give us a brief introduction of that research study, explaining why was it a valuable project to do?
And one thing is, Sarah, that like when we talk about Mycoplasma pneumoniae, it's a bacterium, right? And then you think, well, a bacterium, you're growing in the laboratory, and then you can do all the testing and you know what to treat it with and all that, right? Well, mycoplasmas are bacteria, yes, but they are a different type of very unique type of bacteria. And they don't grow very easily. At least, you know, Mycoplasma pneumoniae, the one that causes sensory pneumonia in pigs, and you know, it's part of the porcine respiratory disease complex, is a very important issue in the industry, right? You know, for pigs, but it doesn't grow very well in the laboratory. And that, you know, affects the way in which we can go about it for control. So when we think about any other bacterium, then it can be grown. You can test it for antimicrobial resistance, or, you know, to know which antibiotics you could use for treatment. But for high pneumonia, because it's so hard to grow it in the lab, it takes weeks and sometimes even months. And you know, like even if you try to isolate it, you may not be able to, even if the bacterium is there in the sample. So it's like really, it's a finicky bug. And it's really, you know, it's expensive and time consuming, labor intensive. So all that to say that there are not many isolates for this agent, right? And this is not only in Minnesota. I would say, you know, around the world, not a lot of people do isolation, culture and isolation of this agent. So just for you to have an idea, there are, you know, institutions, research and academic institutions in which they have large collections, we will say, you know, in quotation, large collections of mycoplasmas. And then we're talking about, I don't know, 40 strains, you know, like something like really, really small. So for that reason, antimicrobial testing or, you know, antimicrobial susceptibility testing for Mycoplasma pneumoniae doesn't happen very often. And if we go to the literature, you'll see that at least in the United States, we have reports. The most recent reports were from the nine, I think 1978 was the one of the most recent ones. So just for you to have an idea, nobody's really doing that, and it's very old information, right, and data. So what that means is that whenever animals are treated in the field when they are infected, they are treated with antibiotics that we think, like that we know that the mechanism would, you know, be effective on mycoplasma, and we think that it will work, but in reality, we do not test for it. So the question that we had was, do it, for all the eradication programs that are taking place in the field, sometimes we see failures. Are those failures related to the fact that maybe an antibiotic to which the bacterium was resistant was used? And we wouldn't know that, right? So we wanted to identify a way in which we could say, okay, this mycoplasma strain or variant that you have at this farm may be resistant or susceptible to this antimicrobial without having to do the culture of the bacterium. So I know it was, you know, like very ambitious. This is what we had in mind, but it is, the idea was to tie those results from the diagnostics that we were getting to see whether those were affecting the lack of success in some specific instances, I would say, for the eradication, because the eradication programs are very successful in general, but in some cases we're having, you know, these issues. So is this part of what is happening? And that's basically why we designed the study.
Very interesting. I did not know, I guess, that Mycoplasma pneumoniae was so difficult to grow in the lab. So that's interesting. So now, can you share, how did you complete this project?
Well, we started by in investigating the antimicrobial resistance or susceptibility in some strains that we have been collecting over the years, right? So we have worked with practitioners, producers, companies, and we have been able to do culture and isolation of mycoplasma, not, you know, that many strains, but we have a little bit over, you know, like a more than 10 of them, and we are actually growing our collection, and now we have close to 20. But By the time we did the study, it was a little bit over 10 strains that we were comparing. And we compared those to reference strains that have been known for a very long time and that we have very good results for, that like we know their behavior sort of in the laboratory. And then in, that was all in vitro. We did the comparison of those strains to certain antibiotics that had like a different mechanism. All of them different mechanisms, and that they are usually or frequently used in the field to treat these antimicrobial infections, for example. And then that was, we used a method that is called microdilution, broth microdilution, because this is a pathogen that doesn't grow very well in, on plates like other bacteria do. So we use this broth microdilution to see whether we could observe that antimicrobial susceptibility or resistance to certain agents, or certain compounds, excuse me. So that was the first step. And then what we wanted to do was, okay, we have those variants or those strains, then can we compare them at a different level, at the molecular level, right, to see whether we can identify certain genes that can be responsible for this. And I have to say, I was a little bit naive, like proposing all these, because in reality, I mean, antimicrobial resistance is such a complex issue, right? And it's not like we're going to go and, identify a single gene that is involved in this. So we're still trying to, like working in that analysis and comparing it to other databases. And this is ongoing. But the other thing that we wanted to do was to develop a PCR-based test to be able to look at that antimicrobial sensitivity or susceptibility or resistant. And to me, that was the most important outcome that we were going to have from this study. Because if we had that PCR, working, then we wouldn't have had to isolate the agent, which is the most difficult thing to do. So we did work on a PCR based on five different genes that have been identified to be related to resistant to antimicrobials, certain type of antimicrobials. And we were able to make that work. I mean, at least in the research laboratory, we run that test, and that's something that we could do for, certain producers or veterinarians if they needed to. However, this is not something that is in the hands of the diagnostic laboratory. So it's not routine service for the diagnostic laboratory. So far to date, everything is, in the research area, and we're still trying to figure out what would be the best way to have this as, like a high throughput test or something like that. But there is a lot of interpretation that goes into it. The other aspect that is important to mention is that we're looking at only these genes, right? Like we know those ones are related to those results, and then we can see, okay, there is susceptibility or not to certain antimicrobial compounds. However, that doesn't, take into account other genes that could play an important role. So this, I would say, one way to explain it would be like, okay, partially we can say what is happening, but not totally. So many things could be escaping what we can know about the behavior of the bacterial strain against a different compound, antimicrobial compound. Does that make sense?
I think so. Kind of from what I gathered is a lot of this project was kind of like in lab. Like once you got your different strains, then you were doing different lab work and stuff like that, and ultimately trying to get a PCR test that was going to work.
Definitely. And the thing is that this was funded by the Rapid Response Funds, right? Like this is something that you want a good answer because it's something that is timely. And the issue is that there are many programs for eradication of mycoplasma that are taking place as we speak, okay? And like the trend is growing, right? And there is more and more eradication. And then we wanted to be able to support those efforts further, with this test. And maybe in some specific cases, we can do that. Like I said, this is research at this point. But the beauty for this project was that we had this collection of mycoplasmas that we could go off of. And those were all collected in the United States, from commercial farms. So we were not, like getting or purchasing strains from different countries and seeing, how they behave. No, these are strains that had been isolated from the United States in the last 10 years, less than that, actually. But, during that time, so those are what we call the contemporary strains, even though, like they may be a little bit old, but it is more recent than what it's reported in the literature. So, I mean, this is all to say there is very little information out there in this aspect of the treatment of this pathogen. And definitely we need better tools for diagnostics that can help us support those efforts in the field. So this is a very good, case of the connectivity of, what the VDL, the veterinary diagnostic laboratory, does and how that can help, those projects to increase the health in swine herds or increase, productivity, pork productivity in general.
So to kind of help put in perspective, what your project is attempting to do, currently, if a farm sends in a sample and it's going to be tested for Mycoplasma pneumoniae, can you briefly explain like what are the protocols that the VDL would use to test that?
That's a very good question. And I would say, Sarah, that it all depends on, what the diagnostic objective is, right? Like, what is it that you're looking for? What type of answer? And if you're only trying to detect if the agent is, causing disease, if the pigs are still infected with it, right? Then we don't do bacterial isolation because of all the limitations that I mentioned earlier. But PCR, for example, PCR testing would be really sensitive, really accurate to tell if the agent is there in the animal, right? And then you may have talked, or you may have known about the viability PCR that we already have, and that's a different project, right? But that's another PCR test that we have to try to tell. Well, now that you detected Mycoplasma pneumoniae there, was it an infectious Mycoplasma? So, sort of a live Mycoplasma, or a dead one, and can it cause disease? That's a different question, but with PCR, we can do those things. Sometimes we also receive like blood samples, for example, to separate serum, and in the serum, we look for antibodies that can help us know about the exposure of the host or the pig to one specific agent. So if we look for those antibodies, we can tell, okay, yeah, they have seen the agent or they have been vaccinated, like we can try to tell about the exposure to the agent itself. But here, what we're trying to say is, okay, if I select one specific drug to treat these animals, am I going to be able to be successful in that treatment, or are the pigs going to, not, they are not going to see a difference because basically, it is an antibiotic that the bacterium is resistant to. So that's what we were going after. And the thing is that basically that's not performed anywhere in the world. It's like it's not really a thing that people do. You will have to do like a special request if you really want, the culture. And setting up the antimicrobial susceptibility testing is not that easy either. So, I mean, like that will be, that's the route that I would like to, be able to streamline with this PCR test. But we see that still there is a lot of, that we need to cover, a lot that we need to cover because it's not going to be that easy. But at least this is the first step. And the idea would be to be able to say, yes, this is an antibiotic that you can use to treat these animals.
Very interesting. I have lots of other questions, but probably should stay on task or so that we can learn what your results were. Can you share of this specific project that you're choosing to talk about today, what were the results from your study?
Well, first of all, I mean, I have to admit this is a very complex issue. Like the question is not easy to answer. It's not just one single project that is going to help us get there, right? But
Yeah.
at least knowing, like from the strains that we looked into and the variants that we compared, we did not identify any very high, antibiotic antimicrobial resistance. So that was great news. For us, it's like, okay, most of the antimicrobial compounds that are being used in the field may be effective to the agents that we are dealing with. But once again, you have to, keep in mind that we only tested a very limited number of strains or, of Mycoplasma pneumoniae, and then we may be missing the ones that can be resistant. Yes, that could happen. But in general, from this information, we gathered that. And then the other part that was very important to me was, like being able to know that with the PCR testing, even though it's partial information that we'll get, we can get, we can have an idea of the, once again, the efficacy that certain antibiotics could have against an agent. And this is something that you wouldn't be using, like if you use that PCR test, it's not going to be like, okay, let's do it for all the cases, like if you are doing an elimination program and things didn't go as planned, can we look into the variant that you have at the farm and try to see whether this could be the issue? But many different things could be playing a role there. And a failure in the elimination does not equal, antimicrobial resistance always, right? So I want to be very clear in the sense that there are many factors that could play a role there and then could lead into a failure. But investigating, other aspects and then trying to see whether we can, find a smoking gun, like if, that would be ideal. But then this test, this PCR test, will be another, tool that we will be able to use in those cases, trying to figure out what went in a different way that as we planned.
So, based off of what you just shared, what conclusions can be made from this research? Or maybe it's further questions.
I mean, like definitely there are further questions, right? And then I would like to see more research taking place and, like development of maybe better techniques and better media that we could to grow the agent and making that process easier and doable and being able to do on a regular basis, the monitoring of that antimicrobial susceptibility. That would be ideal. We are not there. And then because of that, we'll have to, keep working with the molecular tools that we have at this time and maybe, I mean, like make the best interpretations that we can with those results, but being, careful enough, knowing that the information is only limited, it's partial, and we are not going to get all the results.
So, of what you shared, how are those important takeaways from this project?
To me, it's very clear that still, I mean, like we need to do some work on diagnostics and being able to provide information that is useful to the field and to the, initiatives that are taking place in the field is super important. Even though this sounded like a study that was very, like a lab-based and just in vitro and all that, this is very applicable because we can use it directly with samples from the field. So just keep in mind, this will not give us all the answers. And we're still developing and working with these tests to make it even more useful. But these are the, the first steps, I would say, for a more applied way to look into antimicrobial resistance for Mycoplasma pneumoniae.
I think you have an important point in all of that, in that for a lot of your research, it's not necessarily kind of a quick answer, that a lot of times you need to do different projects that often maybe have other questions that come up, and then that leads you to doing another project, and then all of those projects together kind of combine into your kind of final result, if you want to say, or kind of the outcome. I shouldn't say result, but the outcome that you want to get to.
Definitely, Sarah. And I mean, like that's the way research is, right? And we do one study and we have more questions and start a new one, but we learn along the way. And I would say as well that, with working with Mycoplasma for over 2 decades now, I have learned that we need to be patient, and mycoplasma is a very slow pathogen in any way that you think about it. It's like it grows slowly in the lab, and it takes a while to, show clinical signs when pigs are infected, and it takes a very long time as well, for the pigs to clear it out of their system. So you learn that you need to, understand that pace. That's one thing, but that has not stopped us from being really creative and coming up with initiatives, for control and doing different things that maybe, like in the past we didn't think about it. But yeah, you know what? For mycoplasma, we don't have this type of product. We'll have to, do things this different way. And it has helped so much. And it is so rewarding to see, the farms that, you 15 years ago, you were working with them, or 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and now you cannot collaborate with them because they are free of the disease. That's great. I mean, it is an issue because now I am running out of, farms to work with, or systems to work with, but it is great. We are ch achieving the goal of, disease elimination, and that's what, makes your work so worth it. It's super, super interesting. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, like the support from everybody who is, like they have ideas, or they say, I can collaborate this way. And, like from your perspective, Sarah, the support that we have had from Extension at the University of Minnesota as well. So everything is very much appreciated because it is not only one person or only one group doing things. It's like you have to work together with other people to be able to really move forward.
So, to wrap up our discussion here, is there any other closing remarks that you would like to make before we end?
I would say, like, yes, there are obstacles in the way for Mycoplasma pneumoniae eradication, but I have been so impressed with how, like the people out there in the field, they jumped over those, or they dodged them, and they have been so creative on going out around those things and being able to do eradication that it is exciting to be in this field and to work with this progressive industry.
Yeah, and I'm sure the producers enjoy the work that you do. They wouldn't be where they are today if it wasn't for you and your lab doing the work that you're doing.
It's just great to be part of this.
Well, thank you, Maria, for sharing your research on Mycoplasma pneumoniae and investigating its antimicrobial susceptibility with us today.
Well, thank you for the invite to share this information, Sarah.
And thank you to all of the listeners. Once again, this is the University of Minnesota Swine and You podcast. And this has been Sarah Sheik Belke, Swine Extension Educator, along with Maria Peters, Associate Professor in the Department of Veterinary Population Medicine. To further connect with U of M Extension, please visit the swine-specific pages on our University of Minnesota Extension's website at www.extension.umn.edu/swine. And on those pages, you'll find connections to our blog as well as our Facebook page to learn about research being done by our swine faculty in veterinary medicine. You can visit their blog, which is Swine in Minnesota, at www.umnswinenews.com.